Welcome to Burning the Ships podcast, folks. I'm your host, Jason Seward, and like we've been doing every week, I'm going to kick it off with JJ's joke of the week. And I will preface every week that he claims he's coming up and with these jokes and making them up. He simply gives them to me. I am 100% or 99% sure he's going to Google or some kind of app he has on his iPad to get these jokes, but he claims he's making them up, so I'll let him roll with it. But the joke of the week this week: why can't T-Rex clap his hands? Because he is extinct. And that's JJ's joke of the week. So now let's get into the episode of today. I have somebody in Philip Ty that I met several years ago at a property that I was looking to purchase that he had as a wholesale deal. And this goes back to, I want to say it was probably 2018-ish. He was just getting, might have been 2019, but he was just getting started in his real estate journey. And at the time, he was working a full-time career. And he'll get into all that in the IT space, or I think he was a software engineer. But he's working full-time and trying to break into the real estate career. And he'll get into his vision and all that stuff he had at that time and kind of where it's gone from there. But I met him right at the beginning, and he was wholesaling properties. Ultimately, I didn't end up purchasing that property, but he met me there to look at. And we had I connected with him right away. He was... at the time, I had just started doing jiu-jitsu at the time, where I think my kids were doing it, and I wasn't far behind them. And he, you know, was very active as well. So we had that connection, and we kind of shared like what we were doing in real estate at the time. I was still working my full-time career, so was he, and we both had visions on where we wanted to go with that. We kind of shared that with each other, and then we've kept up ever since, mainly through social media. And both of us have really seen our visions in different ways. It might not have been exactly like either one of us had originally thought, but we have seen those visions kind of coming to fruition. He, shortly after I met him, left his corporate career, and he'll talk about all that. So he essentially burned the ships on that. But I'll tell you a little bit about Philip and his, you know, what he's got going on in real estate. So he started like his first dabbling with real estate investing started in 2017. But since that point, he's done over 60 fix and flips. He's done over 80 wholesale transactions, and he's done over 30 lending transactions. He's a short-term lender as well. He currently manages 13 single family homes, and they're all a mix of long-term, mid-term, and short-term rentals. He owns and operates a commercial property, and he's a limited partner, an LP, on a 41-unit property, multifamily property in Buxton, North Carolina. Recently, he's acquired or purchased a landscaping company in Buford, Georgia, with, you know, zero out of pocket. So he was able to take that business down and very passively take it over. And now he owns that property and looking to add more, as he'll speak to a little bit later. And he currently focuses on fix and flips, still in and around the Richmond area, short-term lending, and buying commercial properties and businesses. So he'll get into all that in the interview, but I'm very thrilled and excited to finally catch up with him on this podcast and catch up with him in general, because I haven't spoken with him in a while other than coordinating this. So I'm excited to hear what he's got going on, and I'm just thrilled to just share stories and experiences with somebody that has kind of been on the similar path as me when it comes to going into real estate while working a corporate career, ultimately being able to leave that and exit with the vision and see it grow from there. So with that, let's welcome in Philip Ty. Philip Ty, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
Good to be here, man. Thanks so much for the invite.
Yeah, how's it going?
Going good, man. You know, woke up this morning, so no complaints.
Yeah, there you go. Hi, Philip. I've gotten to really know you over the years, kind of following you through social media, but we actually met, and I don't know if you remember this, first time we met was at a property in Colonial Heights, Virginia.
Yep.
And You don't know this, but you kind of gave me a nugget that I took away from that meeting. Because when you, I believe that house was occupied. So there were people in there and you were kind of in the group that was trying to wholesale it. But you showed up with a camera and you said that anytime you go to these houses that are occupied, you don't want people to know that you're actually buying it. You want to be the cameraman or something like that. So you avoid any awkward conversations. And I have implemented that ever since. So look, I'm just the handyman, the cameraman, whatever. I'm never the owner of it. So
never going to be the owner, man.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And if I remember correctly, you had just hurt your knee or something at that point. You were limping around or had a brace on or something.
So. Yeah, I was probably doing like, it was from jujitsu. So I'm a pretty avid jujitsu practitioner. And I know you started jujitsu too as well. And we were talking about that for a minute when we first met. And so, yeah, I think that was a good memory. Yeah. So I honestly don't remember if my knee was hurt or not. But if you remember, then it was not outside the realm.
But yeah, man. And to that point, we'll get into kind of what you're up to and stuff. But you mentioned you're not just a jujitsu practitioner. You're a recent black belt, right?
I got my black belt last March 11th, 2024.
That's amazing, man. Most folks, like I'm still in the grind working my way up, but most folks don't see it through to that point, you know, whether it's due to injury or their body doesn't allow them or they just get out of it, you know? So kudos to you for, I mean, that alone, and we'll get into a lot of this when it comes to your business stuff, but that tells the story of your discipline, right? And, and I would imagine there's a lot of parallels and analogies you can make between business and the mats. So, you know, want to encourage you to kind of compare the two as we move forward. But getting into it, man, let's start things off with, I'll kind of turn it over to you and let you introduce yourself at a high level, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, no problem, man. So I'm Philip Tai, based out of Richmond, Virginia. I've been a software engineer, so I quit my job back in July 2021. Went full-time real estate investing, but before going full-time real estate investing, I had been well-educated through mentorships, programs, etc., and then dabbled in real estate investing by fixing and flipping, first and foremost, and then I was able to flip my way to quit my job. So when COVID happened, I think it was probably one of the best times for me to quit my jobs because we had so many flips going on. I think I was doing about, between those 2 years, 2021 and 2022, about 42 like acquisitions and fixing and flipping. So I really generated enough income to be able to quit my job and then bet that on myself. And then joined a couple of more mentorship programs. And like, that's the key for me, is like always reinvesting in yourself as the year goes on, because if you reinvest in yourself, you just get more mentorships, but you also get more network. Your network grows and so does your resources. And so right around 2022, kind of slowed down on fixing and flipping and wholesaling. We jumped into lending per se, did a little bit of lending, did about 30 transactions, and I continue to lend here and there depending on the deal. And then 2024 is when I bought my first business, a landscaping business out of Buford, Georgia. And I just didn't buy a business right off the bat. I actually learned how to buy a business, and then went to go buy a business. And then at the current moment, you know, I've done over 60 renovations in my career since 2017. I've done over 80 wholesale deals, over 30 lending transactions. I control right around 14 rentals, one commercial, and then one landscape business. And then at the current moment, I'm in the process of acquiring another commercial property, a nice little small strip mall, and acquiring two more landscaping businesses in Atlanta, Georgia. So that's kind of at a high level where I'm at.
So what I'm hearing through all that is a lot of action has been taken on the heels of education, right? Or in line with education. And I think, you know, you see it, you've been in the game long enough and through networking groups and things that you're a part of, and we see it as well. There's no shortage of information and education to be had, right? But at some point, action has to be taken. And you just rattled off very humbly all the things that you've gotten involved with over the last, you know, 5 years or so. And and it stacks. It stacks, but it only stacks because you have taken the action on the heels of mentorship and education. So speak to that mindset a lot or a little bit, if you don't mind, because a lot of people, they spend so much time like sharpening the axe, but they never swing at the tree, you know, and you're doing both simultaneously. So speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, my philosophy on this particular aspect of life is like, you can learn everything that you want in life. And if you never take action, then obviously that was a waste of your time per se. So for me, I can always obviously speak to myself, but also see this in other folks, is that I had enough pain in order for me to make a change. So if you don't have enough pain, then you don't have a reason to change. And so for me, I really wanted financial freedom. I didn't want to do a 9-to-5 job the next 20, 30 years and building someone else's wealth. I mean, I'm not saying anything that's wrong with that. I'm just saying if you're happy with doing that, dude, that's awesome. But for me, I wanted to obviously, I want more out of life. And the mindset for me is like, when I reinvest in, or I invest in an education, I don't like have to think about like how am I getting this back? I'm like, how can I make more money than I spent in the education, right? So an education for me is just, the mindset of it is, honestly, I'm here to grow to my potential. And the best thing about like potential is that you'll never reach potential. And so the journey of getting as far as you possibly can in this life is like also, I think, fun. It's like a game right now, how I view it. It's kind of like jujitsu. It's kind of the same parallels, mm-hmm. right? Now that I'm a black belt, I actually feel like I'm a white belt against other black belts because I just get destroyed. Yeah. So like, it's the same journey. Like, once you reach a particular peak, you can see multiple peaks beyond the peak that you reached. And that's the same thing with investing. There's so many different ways that you can slice up a deal that you haven't done yet. Same with jiu-jitsu. There's so many submissions or positions that you haven't got into or actually mastered that you can actually continue to practice on. So for me, honestly, investing in your education is like essential. Getting around like-minded folks, getting around what can be done, because if you stay with the same group of people, your mindset is also going to be limited. And so like, I would rather be around folks that have obviously done the things that I want to do, and then they're actually learning from people that actually become better and greater. So like, I mean, it's essential for me. It's like, if you don't educate yourself, I think you start to die in a sense. So yeah, so yeah, my mindset about it.
Couldn't agree more, man. And it's been so just to share a little bit, and we'll get back to your story, but kind of the parallels between my story and yours was the same thing. I was in a corporate career. I hung around in it much longer than it sounds like you broke away, but for about 17 years for me, in the same job, same company, or many jobs within that company. But the job wasn't painful. Like, the job itself was not painful. It was an easy job. I did good at it. It was a sales career. I made a lot of money. That was fun. The pain came from the time commitment and the compromise on my time with my family and my personal well-being and all that stuff. And that was where the pain came from. And to your point, once that pain gets, you know, loud enough and hard enough, like I'm wired much like you described, I have to get away from it. I've got to find, like, I'm resourceful enough to figure out another way. But prior to doing that, I not only did I not lean into education and mentorship, I intentionally shied away from it. And the reason was, like, the area that I was trying to build upon outside of my career was in real estate. But it was in that building of it, it was potentially a conflict of interest between my corporate career and that career. So I intentionally was very quiet about it. I didn't go to network meetings. I didn't join any groups because I didn't want it to be exposed to my employer that I was spending all this time in real estate. So it wasn't until I finally decided, like, all right, I've got to figure a way out, that I started leaning into it. And to your point, it was hockey stick growth from there. As soon as I joined my first paid mastermind group, it took off. And then on the heels of that, I've been a part of several groups and, you know, mentored people, been mentees to people and all that stuff. But that's where the growth happens, 100%. You know, you get inspired, and then you get the accountability to take action, you know, kind of, which I know you've lived it as well. So
yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
But you talk about another thing that I've noticed with you. And I think this is very important as people continue to grow. And you mentioned it, it's like a game. It'll never stop. As long as you're a black belt in jiu-jitsu, you're always going to be, 10 years from now, you're going to be challenged by the young blue belt wrestler that comes in there that gives you a fit, right? You're going to have to figure out new things to keep up with him. But as you continue to advance in your real estate career or just in life, how important do you think it is to not only continue to learn from those that are ahead of you, but also have a hand down and help those that are coming up behind you and take on that role of being a mentor yourself and a coach yourself?
I think it's really important. So to kind of speak on that, like I teach jiu-jitsu too as well. So I always go and help people when they have questions after class. Like I have no problem doing that. As far as like riding the line between both, I mean, I think that's where most fulfillment comes in life, is where you help other people out and you help them succeed. And there's like nothing, I don't think, more rewarding to help another person like unlock a mind shift set. So whatever they're stuck in, and you're like, oh, that's an easy answer. And you can kind of break it down and show them, and then either potentially walk them through their first deal or their first, you know, submission or whatever it may be. I think that's very fulfilling in the sense of that, because not only am I teaching class, I'm also helping other people in the real estate space. We have a community with a couple of other business partner of mine that we opened up a community to help people like that are struggling in real estate, that want to learn real estate, because obviously knowledge right now is, I think, very easy to access, but how you use the knowledge and how you leverage the knowledge is where people, I think, might not be able to do it. So if you have like a mentor or a person that can help you, or a coach, whatever, or a community that helps you, guide you along the way of like, oh, you need to look at X, Y, and Z before you do, you know, one, then that's way more efficient than just having all this knowledge and not knowing what to do with it. So yeah, I think it's essential. I think it's also fulfilling as a human. And then I don't see why nobody would not do this if they have all this knowledge and all this time. I think only giving back in community to community is like one of, I guess, a greater calling per se.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of along with that is I know early on when I was starting to join these, you know, this, I've been a part of masterminds now for 3 or 4 years, but early on when I was starting to do it, a lot of folks around me are like, man, you're essentially, why are you paying so much money for these things? Right. Because that's a tough ROI to calculate, right? I'm going to dish out 20 grand a year to be a part of this environment. But what my answer was and still is, you pay attention to what you pay for, right? If I'm talking about pain, if I'm inflicting pain upon myself by writing a check, right?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to naturally pay more attention to that because I want to get value out of it. And a lot of, I'd like to hear you talk about it too, because I mentor a few people that are kind of starting out in real estate too, and I don't do it at a cost. But eventually, as I continue to have more free time through my passive investments, I intend to start charging for coaching and things like that. And it's not because that's going to be a revenue stream for me. Yeah. Like that's a little piece of it, but it's because I want to deal with folks and teach folks that are investing something into it so they pay attention to it. Do you have that same mindset around charging or paying for coaching or education?
Yeah, I think, you know, we live in a society of entitled people, which is totally fine, right? It's also a filter mechanism too as well. So there's like 2 points of that question. So to back it up, when I first got into this business where people were like paying $30,000, $40,000 for a mastermind, I was like, there's no effing way that I will ever pay for that. That sounds so ridiculous. But here I am, like, you know, 4 years later, paying $30,000, $40,000 a year for a mastermind. And like, why? Like, my younger self would be like, why are you doing this? Well, here's what I kind of distilled when I go into these rooms. You go into a filter room where everybody has the capability to make this amount of money. And you know that people have other money because this is not just their only, they didn't put all their eggs in one basket, essentially, is what you're kind of thinking about. Any smart investor would think this. Now you have a room of a filtered room with people that you can leverage skill sets, their connections, their capital, their resources. And then you can also make content. You can do deals together. Like, you guys are all in the same mindset. And I realize that when I get into more of these filter rooms, I'm actually building my storage of tools and resources. And like, I think that's how I look at it now. And as far as, you know, potentially charging people, yes, I feel like it's another point of accountability, not to me, but to yourself. Like, hey, you're actually paying for this education and mentorship and coach, because you basically see that, you know, either Jason or myself have been or is at where you want to be in the next, you know, 5 years. But let's just go ahead and shorten up that time frame to maybe a year, year and a half, right? And if you can do deals with me, you can pay and learn and then also get paid again as you earn. So I think I would want a filtered room of people of like-minded individuals that are willing to pay for the education and like don't want to mess around, because I have friends that mess around. They're still doing the same thing over and over again, you know, like 5 years ago. So I would rather hang out with people that actually want to grow and actually want to build community and actually want to help their own community. I think that's what an entrepreneur and investor should be aiming for. And as a leader, you can say.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to be, I mean, folks, you know, that are listening and maybe haven't leaned in or researched as much on, you know, options out there for education and mentorship and stuff like that. You got to be careful because for every 10 out there that you might see on social media, 5 of them are just BS, right? They're, you know, so you've got to figure out a way to whether, for us, it was, we spent a lot of time talking to individuals that had been in the groups or are currently in the groups. And that's kind of was our filter mechanism to know whether or not, but you got to be careful there. But to your point, getting in those rooms, I mean, I look back to the very first big one we joined was Legacy Family with Tim Bratz. It was a commercial. We're still in that one to this day.
Nice.
But we left our careers to go all in on syndicating multifamily real estate, right? Mm. That was our one thing we were going to lock in. We joined that group to get us there. We go to our first mastermind, or first like physical event where we were there with the group, and we meet a member of the group who has one of the largest real estate debt funds that is doing hard money loans. We meet her in the group and we link up with her. And then 6 months after that, 100% pivot, we're going to start a debt fund. And that's what we've done ever since. So my point is there, you joining these groups, like you're going to find gold if you mine hard enough for it, right? Yeah. And we got to that point just through building a friendship. And we ultimately hired her as a consultant to help us build this debt fund that we're running now. But it's all about finding a way to get into those rooms. And a lot of times that comes with a high price tag. It's just the way, the nature of it, you know?
And I will say that it doesn't, like you paid a price tag, but it's also work involved. You got to work the room. Mm-hmm. You just can't go in there and expect people to come to you. It's still work at the end of the day after you pay the price tag. Like, yep.
Yeah, we see that a lot. Like folks, you know, they pay the money and they think just through osmosis it's going to happen, right? No, I think it's important, these groups, as you join them, you have to figure out not a way to just be a consumer of the value that it provides, but figure a way to show that you can bring value to certain things, right? And I know you certainly do that. So let's get into the business side of it a little bit. So you started off flipping and doing some wholesaling and stuff like that.
Yep.
We talk about a lot about that, those types of things on this podcast. What I'm very intrigued by is it looks like in the last few years you've transitioned a lot of your focus into buying businesses.
Yeah.
So it's no secret that there's going to be opportunities, you know, abundance, in abundance the next several years as the boomer generation kind of starts selling out of their businesses. So is that the intent? Are you trying to focus on those opportunities as you move forward?
Well, my intent is to, so there's another person in my group named Abraham Gray, and he kind of showed me like what he does, and he buys real estate and he buys businesses and he owns a lot of, you know, either one. He can buy a house every single day if he wanted to, right? And he buys businesses. So if one, let's say, you know, obviously people say we're overdue for a correction in the real estate space, but I don't think it's going to happen for quite some time. If you look at the information out there, we've been selling houses at a deficit. We actually sold less houses last year than we did since 2008 or something like that. So there's still a huge demand of pent up people. And so if the real estate sector just takes a huge crash, right, then I can just focus on business buying. I can basically balance my time. And then vice versa, if business buying isn't going so well, then I can focus more on real estate. So my main shift here is just to build more passive but active income at the same time by leveraging business buying, since there is a huge opportunity, like you said before, baby boomers are retiring at a tremendous rate. And so they don't really have heirs or people to pass on the business because their daughters and sons are already doing the corporate job. They're already wanting to be a YouTube, creator, influencer, and they just don't want to manage a plumbing or electrical company. Like they have no desire of that. So you can buy these deals just as creatively as you buy real estate, if not even more creative. Actually, I think there's actually better financing through the SBA than there is with real estate. Because if you go a conventional, traditional route of buying real estate, you're only going to be buying or getting a loan as a real estate investor, 75% to 80% loan to value, versus all you have to do is put on 10% for a business and half of that the seller can carry. So ultimately you can buy a business for 5% down.
Yep.
And it's kind of crazy on how you think about it, because the levers that you can pull in business is way more levers than you can pull in real estate, because you're, depending on what kind of real estate you buy, I say single family homes, levers are comps and the local rental market, right? Versus you can pull down marketing, you can pull down more connections, you can add more services, you can systematize the processes in a business. Like there's so many things you can do. So for me, my focus on business is that I'm not doing it by myself. I'm building a team. I've already have a team that I've built to help me buy more businesses, and I'm more of the investor role. So I'm not in the day-to-day operations. I'm not managing a team of employees. I'm not picking up the phone and doing calls. I'm only focusing on acquiring businesses and then passing it off to the team to help operate it, stabilize it, and then grow the revenues. So it's just a way where I can leverage my existing skill set to grow more wealth, but also employ more people, help baby boomers sell their companies, because at the end of the day, this is the thing they've been building for the last 20, 30 years.
Yep.
So it's their baby. So for me, business buying is like, it makes sense. Like as an investor, like it goes hand in hand with businesses, because there are some real estate that people sell at the same time. And so you can maximize on that. And there's like ways that you can structure deals just the way in real estate too as well. So, I mean, honestly, it just makes more sense.
It does. And I mean, you think about it just from like a number standpoint. You talk about like get in there, implement, changes and things like that to increase revenue. Even if you don't do that, you buy a mom and pop business. Let's say you spend $10 million on it, it's a $10 million business, but 5% down, you're putting $500,000 down, and you just simply pay down that SBA loan through the revenue that's coming in. You're spitting off a little bit of cash flow. And 5 years from now, you exited at that same $10 million valuation. You're putting a couple million dollars in your pocket just through pay down of that loan, right? With the $500,000 investment. So the economics of it are phenomenal. And we're starting to look at it too. The key, the tricky part is, I think for folks looking to get into this, and this is where it's, again, important to have a mentor and to get education on it, is knowing how to value a business, knowing how to structure the financing, mm-hmm. knowing how to leverage seller financing and educate a lot of these, again, mom and pop owners. They may be very good business operators, but not understand the finance side of it, and may have never been spoken to about selling this, but doing so on seller finance terms where they can spread out their gains and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So these are this opportunities in every corner. And you mentioned your landscaping business, I think you said down in Georgia. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, Buford, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, basically.
You're not driving to Georgia, getting on a zero-turn mower and putting mulch in people's flower beds.
I'm in Richmond, so.
Right, Virginia. Yeah. You're just simply finding through probably your team, you know, and you've got different avenues that you bring deals to yourself. You're finding it, you're creatively structuring it, and then you're just overseeing it from there, right?
Yeah, yeah my own job is just to find other opportunities for my my partners to manage.
Yeah.
So like, and to kind of like be on your point, like we don't call it seller finance. We call it an annuity structure.
Yeah.
So a lot of baby boomers know what annuity structure is.
Yeah.
Maybe not seller finance. Imagine pitching to a baby boomer like, hey, would you want to have two retirement plans? You know, have two streams of income. So one from your like 401k or whatever they have, and then one for your business. We call it an annuity structure.
Philip, you drop that. That's really good because, as I sold annuities for 17 years of my life and life insurance and all that stuff, and I've never sold, like trying to pitch seller financing to somebody, use that analogy. That's a great analogy. I appreciate you sharing that.
No problem, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. All right. So you got that going on, but you said you're still very active in the real estate space as well, right? So you're diversifying. You're obviously, you know, long-term wealth creation comes through real estate. You can buy businesses, you can exit them in 5 years, you can do all that, but it may not be the most cash-flowing investment short-term, but long-term wealth, tax benefits, all of that is in the real estate niche, and there's a lot of niches within the real estate niche. Yep. What's your focus right now in that, and where do you see that going and evolving I know we don't know what the markets are going to do, but there will be ups and downs, and there always have been. Where do you envision yourself in real estate as we move forward?
So right now I'm still doing facing and flipping. That's like keeping my contractors busy. I've built over, you know, many, many years of relationships. So I'm continuously buying in the Richmond area. It's been growing steadily, as you already know. Mm-hmm. And then as far as what I'm acquiring, so I'm fixing and flipping everything. I want to acquire more small strip malls, like 3 to 6 units. I like dealing with businesses. It's just less emotions, you can say. And you get, it's like a triple net lease with anything. I just want more passive income. And, you know, with that being said, it's just easier to deal with. I would rather want to, you know, buy those and then keep it that way. And then if there's any other opportunities, like right now I'm talking to a seller that has 21 properties and he has on a land contract. And what that is basically, you know, like a rent to own situation, right? The seller still has the title and the debt is still there. Once the buyer pays it all off, then the debt or the deed is handled over to the buyer, but the buyer is responsible for everything, taxes, insurance, the mortgage, obviously, and then repairs. And basically you're just the bank. You're the bank.
Right.
And then you can also evict them if they miss payments, if they break the contract, and you can start all over again. So those are type of investments that I'm looking for to kind of streamline just my availability, my time, and then also my efforts to maximize those things. So looking for those kinds of deals because it's just so much less headaches, honestly. I don't want to deal with like toilets. I don't want to deal with people's emotions and their personal problems. Right. I mean, there's a space for that. I feel like I've done enough of that, but now I'm kind of more of like, well, my peace of mind. I kind of want to build a family. I want to settle down, right?
Yeah. So, right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm same boat, man. I mean, my family is, my kids are 13 and 8. So everything I do is with intentionality around more time with them, right? That's it. That's all I want to do. As selfish as that might come off to the grinders out there that just get it every day, every weekend, every holiday, that's not me. It has been at one point in my career, but it's not now, you know, so everything's designed that way. You talk about, you know, and I've had people ask me, you know, if I could go back and change anything in my real estate and business journey, would I? My answer is always no, because I really think, like, or I'll use a specific example. Right now I'm in the lending business, right? We run a debt fund. I have to raise capital for that. I'm having to make hard money loans. What makes me good at that is the years I spent flipping houses and doing the BRRRR strategy and analyzing deals and working with contractors. I can underwrite a deal in 30 seconds, right? And so had I not done all of that and tried to jump into this business right now, it would be a complete F up. Like, it just would not be good. So what's your perspective around that? You know, because you've kind of touched all the corners of real estate in one way or another. Would you go back if you had to start over and do it the same way? I'm sure little tweaks would be made here and there, but, you know.
I think, you know, I don't regret anything that I did. And I mean, there's obviously a couple of things that I would tweak. Like, maybe I shouldn't have lent money to that person and done more due diligence on that person. But that's like also like part of your tuition, you can say, right? And so like, I don't regret anything. I'm still doing Facebook flipping because honestly, anybody can wholesale, like literally anybody, but not a lot of people know how to fix and flip. And that takes a real good skill set. And so, I mean, an 18-year-old can literally wholesale.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But for fixing and flipping, that's a totally different monster, totally different beast. And so I honestly, the skill set that I've built so far is actually a sought off skill, because wholesalers, I get all kinds of like garbage thrown at me. And it's just crazy because none of them have ever done a fix and flip. And so none of them will realize what actually goes into a fix and flip, but they won't get the appropriate information to you as a fix and flipper, which is kind of crazy. They don't understand their customers, which is also like kind of crazy because no one teaches it.
Right.
So like I had no regrets. It's just it's little tweaks as far as like underwriting at the actual person.
Yeah, it's all an education. I mean, I tell the story quite a bit. My very first flip, you know, I had a handful of rentals, but my first flip that was intended to be a flip, I lost $50,000 on. Right, that's terrible. Like, I mean, I'm not gonna go through all the details, but I lost $50,000. Right, horrible. I made every mistake under the book or in the book, but. Like, and this is just how I'm wired. Like, I walked away from that. Like, yeah, it hurt to lose $50,000. I licked my wounds and I knew every mistake I made, and I haven't made the same one since. Now, not all flips since have gone great, but I haven't lost $50,000 on one.
So, exactly.
Right. You know, and yeah. So I think it's all, you know, you either win or learn. That's a cliche, but I agree with that. You mentioned that, you know, and, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you, Philip?
I'm 35. Oh, actually, I'm turning 35 in a couple of weeks, so I'm basically there.
Okay, gotcha. So you mentioned earlier, you know, eventually you want to start a family and do all of that. First of all, I want to applaud you because you have set, you know, from all signs I can see and hear you talking about it, you're setting yourself up to be a very present family man, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And that, I don't know if that was done with intentionality. Okay. Yeah.
So 9 years ago.
That. Yeah. Talk. Yeah. I want to hear more about it.
Yeah. Before, you know, when I was a software engineer, when I was 26 years old, obviously I came into the office and I was like, man, I don't want to be doing this for the next 20, 30 years. And so as a software engineer does, he spends on Google, I'm on Google all the time. So I end up, you know, Googling financial freedom. Right. And there's, in my mind, there's only three things that will stand the test of time as long as humans are here. It's food and water, right? There is clothing and then there's shelter. Like, I suck at the first two, but, you know, real estate, I get. A five-year-old can get real estate. It's very simple, right? You live in it, you know, you do your business in real estate. And so I end up going on this path and, like, you know, one thing led to another. I get ads, as one does on Google. And then I click this free seminar that leads down to a paid seminar, and that paid seminar is a huge upsell. It's basically was into a funnel. I didn't realize at the time, but you know, looking back on it, it's pretty obvious. And so I ended up joining a mentorship called Fortune Builders, and that cost $40,000 as my first mentorship. So I didn't have a house at the time. I was living in my mom's basement. So that just goes to show you that I knew what I did not know. And what I did not know could cost me more than $40,000. To your point exactly, Jason, you lost $50,000 your first flip. I actually broke even on my first flip because I had so much buffer, and then the market saved me. So I learned a lot of lessons. But long story short, I mean, I wanted to become financially free at 26 so I can start a family and be 100% present with my kids because I didn't have that growing up. So it's kind of cliche. It's very like simplistic, but I had this 9-year goal basically when I first started real estate investing.
Dude, when did you start jiu-jitsu?
I started jiu-jitsu back in 2010.
Okay. Yeah. Because it's so many parallels there.
Yeah.
Right? Like you started, I don't know what ultimately took you into your first gym, but you started and eventually you got the bug and now you're on a path, right? And you've continued until black belt level. But you did the exact same thing, it sounds like, with your vision for not just real estate, but for your life. And here you are seeing it through, you know? And I mean, I know you tell that story so nonchalantly, like, oh, it's just what I did. You know, that is very rare. And I know you know that, but it's inspiring. Like, people that might just meet you and see you on social media, everything you have going on now, you know, might see it and say, oh, have the, it must be nice mentality, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh man, overnight success. He's making it is not money.
And it is overnight success.
Right.
Over 9 years, every single night.
9 years. Exactly right. So, and that's where I was going with that. So, I respect that, man. I love, you do a really good, I'm curious because we hire a third party company to handle our social media. Do you handle all of yours yourself or do you have someone on your team handling that?
All my short form videos, I handle most of myself. The long form videos, like on YouTube or whatever, I hire like a video editor.
Right.
And he edits it and I just kind of post it and I make adjustments. But all the short form videos, I do myself.
You do a really good job with it. And I guess you have an IT background, so that kind of
it kind of helps,
right? I have a above average marketing mentality, but I am not a good implementer when it comes to social media. So we had to hire that out, right?
Yeah.
And I would never post anything ever. Nothing would be out there. So, as we kind of get into my last few questions, I want to ask you about that. The importance of, like, it's evolved quite a bit, the marketing strategies and stuff like that, but give me your perspective around the importance of just putting it out there, what you do for all to see.
Yeah, I have a couple of perspective about this, and there's a lot of things that have changed over the years since I'm a software engineer in my past life. I was very an introvert. I didn't want to post, didn't want to do anything, just went under the radar. But Pace Morby is a great mentor of mine, and he has, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers. And so how he views social media is two different ways. One, you get to make clones of yourself. So right now, this recording of us is going to be a clone that you're going to, my clone, your clone, that you're going to push on the internet and people can relate to and kind of build goodwill. Build whatever I need to build, whatever it may be, right? The second thing is that if you have a business and let's say you open a burger shop and you have no sign on the burger shop, how can people know what you do, what you sell? That's stimulus social media. I'm a real estate investor, also a business buyer. If I don't tell anybody that I do this, how can I expect any good leads? How can I expect people know what I do? How can I raise money? How can I buy deals? How can I actually survive in business? So like those two mindset shift really got out of my own way. And then third thing is like social media sucks. I get it. Like doing it, the actions and all that stuff. But like anything in life, when you first start out something, you're going to suck.
Yeah.
Period. You suck at walking when you first started walking. You're still going to suck when you start, when you invest. You're just going to suck at that new sport that you're going to do. But you build that the neurons and the pathways in your mind, and then eventually you become better and better and better. I think the one thing that I have that stands out is consistency. Like, I'm always posting on social media. I'm always, you know, doing something to promote myself. And like, it's free. For God's sake, it's free. Like, you cannot be free. And it helps you also with communication skills. If you suck at communicating, suck at talking, this is a great way to build up your skill. And honestly, you really shouldn't care what people think or how many views you get. It all depends on you just doing it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, we do a lot of content that, you know, again, we record it and just send it off to the folks that make it look professional. But this podcast is, you know, to your point earlier of creating a clone. I mean, we're up to, I don't know, 120, 130 episodes now.
That's awesome, man.
Of hours and hours and hours of my guest and me talking authentically. If anybody wants to see what I'm about and what I'm thinking about anything, they can just go to old podcast. And where does that help me? Number one, I get to meet cool people and talk to cool people and learn things. You gave me a nugget that I'm going to implement right away, the annuity structure with, you know, seller finance, and I love it. But number two, it gives folks that, like, in my business, I require, you know, my business, the lifeblood of my lending business is investors investing in our fund, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who do folks invest with? People they know, like, and trust. So I can refer them to our podcast if they don't know much about us or me or what I'm involved with or what my thought processes are. They can see hours of content with me and then decide from that, hey, I like this guy or I don't. And that knocks out those know, like, trust things that we can get down to business. So it's self-serving for sure, but it's also, I learn from it. I learn from my guests. And the people that are watching and consuming the content, they're hopefully being inspired by it. So it checks all the boxes for me. Yeah. And same thing with, even though I'm not the one editing the final version that goes out into a reel or something like that, it's my face, it's me talking, and that's giving somebody some value. And I take pride in that, you know?
Yeah, so, 100%.
Yeah.
I think social media is like the new form of communication in business moving forward. It just makes the most sense. I mean, like, business cards. Who has a business card anymore? Like I don't. Like, yeah, I just have my social media platforms, and then I have, like, a digital card, honestly speaking. Like, that's the way of business moving towards. It's all digital.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Cool deal. So I'm going to ask you, and you alluded to this. This will be the last question. I get this. Most of my guests, I hit them with this question. But you talked about the journey earlier. So I am fascinated with people's mindset around journey versus the destination. So, and I'll give you some context here. For my entire corporate career, the leading thought I always had was, I cannot wait until vacation. I can't wait until retirement, right? I just cannot wait. So I was always destination focused. So I grinded hard during the journey, because I knew that was what was required to get me to that destination. I've had a complete 180 in mindset now that I'm redesigning my life over the last several years and no longer in that corporate structure, where now my mindset is, I want to create a journey that I'm so passionate about, I don't ever want it to end. I can't envision retirement. I can envision vacations, but I'm still going to tend to my business as needed and stuff like that, because I enjoy what I'm doing.
Yep.
What are your thoughts around this idea?
I love it. I think there is no destination. I think the destination is death, right, for everybody. And that's what everybody is guaranteed in life, right?
Yep.
The journey, I think the journey is sprinkled with a lot of learning lessons, and it's up to you to realize those learning lessons and implement moving forward to help yourself, others, your family members, whoever. Because I think the ultimate, you can say, like what you end up kind of referencing, those vacations, those those holiday breaks, those are just milestones. And within those milestones, you know, everybody needs those milestones to reflect and to rejuvenate or whatever. But I think for me, the ultimate journey is to help as many people as I possibly can, given the short lifespan that I've have and everybody else on the, on this planet. I think that's the most fulfilling thing is like, how can, like, once you get to a point where you are actually stable, like as far as financially, and you're not like on the hunt all the time, every day, I think that's where like your true growth as a human, as a soul, in this world will guide you. I think that's probably one of the most important things that I want to do is just to help as many people as I possibly can while having fulfillment. And there is no particular destiny. There's like goals that you can set, but once you reach those goals, you'll have a bigger goal. So like, I think the goals will drive the journey at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel about life in general.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean,
I am, you know, as I continue to learn more about myself, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that's a journey within a journey, you know,
yeah.
Just learning what makes me tick. But the one thing I've come to learn, and I'm just talking to you for a little bit, I can imagine you're probably the same way, but I am most fulfilled when I have complex puzzles to solve.
Yeah.
And those puzzles are different, have been different all along my journey. You know, some, like now I'm like yourself, I'm kind of evolving to like, let's get this thing a little more passive so I can do other things that are more fulfilling to other people and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that's a complex puzzle too. And if the puzzle's not there in front of me, my wife jokes all the time that I am the world's best at creating problems, yeah. A conflict if it's not there.
Sure.
Like just because I thrive off of having just complex things to solve. So, you know, and I think that's just kind of in most entrepreneurs, that's in our DNA, you know. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree. I mean, you know, like maybe I'm not to that extent, but I do get a little bit antsy when I don't having to do.
Yeah.
Right. I had to either go out of the house, go get a nice good workout in, jujitsu, just really just tire the mind, tire the body, and then like, okay, just chill out.
Yeah.
If I had nothing to do, I would probably lose my mind for sure. Yeah. So I would probably create problems just like you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of want to wrap it up with this because I scream from the mountaintop. Well, I'm not at the mountaintop, but of jujitsu, just trying to encourage everybody, whether it's jujitsu or find something that is kind of community based, but also you can improve yourself physically, mentally, all those things. But I think, and I kind of go to this mentally a lot when I'm faced with like a really adverse time in real estate, business, life, anything. I can kind of, you know, close my eyes and put myself in that position where I've got a 250-pound man on top of me smothering me and I've got to breathe through it, right?
Yeah.
So you have been at it a lot longer than me. You have a lot more experience. Just kind of end on the parallels and how much jujitsu has helped you shape just your life, your perspective around adversity, being calm, all those things. Speak on whatever you want with that. So
yeah, so not a lot of people know about this about me, but you know, I went through, obviously everybody goes through different emotional roller coasters in life, and depressions is like one of those big things that are like a lot of people's rock bottoms. And you don't think about, you know, who can help you or whatnot. I think most of your problems. And for me, when I was depressed, I actually went back to jujitsu. And I didn't realize at the time, and looking back on it, community does help solve depression for me. So that was one of the adversities that I had to fight through in order for me to start real estate investing. And once I got to a point of stabilization where I have regular emotions, where I'm not depressed, not thinking about committing suicide or whatnot, then I can build off of that. And so the next thing that I realized, and like jujitsu kind of helps you do this because all you're doing is problem solving through your way through your goals, right? Your goal is ultimately to get to submit to the person. And for personal life, you know, ultimate goal for me was financial freedom, right? So in that particular sense, I'm like, cool. Like, now I have an actual problem of my own personal life because jiu-jitsu helped me kind of see that. Like, I need to make more money. I need to quit this job that I don't really like, even though it's paying really good money. I want to go do my passion. So there's so many similarities in that too, as well, because jiu-jitsu, you cannot cheat in jiu-jitsu. It's like how you cannot, you can cheat in life, but that's not going to get you very far. Just like in jiu-jitsu, you can cheat in jiu-jitsu, but it won't get you very far. So there is no, like, there is no easy button. You just got to do the hard work, and like, it'll help you get through all of the struggles of life. Because if you get those hard rolls in, if you do the right techniques, like, it translates in real life. If you just follow directions and you just do everything that's right, it will translate also in wealth. And for me, you know, like, jiu-jitsu has been such one of those pillared moments to where if I have a stressful day, if, like, you know, my first fix and flip, all the wire was stolen, I had to redo so many things. I had it, like, stressful as hell as can be. But when those stress comes, I just go do jiu-jitsu and I want to get present in the moment. There is nothing like being present in the moment where someone's literally trying to choke you out, break your arm, to make you forget all of the other issues that you currently have in your life. And then when you're done with it, you're tired. You're like, okay, maybe that wasn't, like, my problems in life. It's not that bad because I just survived getting murdered, right? So it makes it so much, like, the parallels and the contrast is so different. Jiu-jitsu is like one of those things when you can keep calm in, like, really bad situations, and it also translate into situations where you do have bad times in real life. When I have those bad times in real life, I used to think, like, why me? You know, this person did this to me, this person did that to me. But now I'm like, okay, why is this the best thing that could ever happen to me? So I try to flip it on its head and try to find the good in the bad, versus trying to find the bad in the bad, you know? I mean, those are two parallels that I love jiu-jitsu about. And, you know, whether it's jiu-jitsu or something else, I mean, if you're facing depression now, I mean, the cure is community. It's not antidepressants. It's actually finding a like-minded tribe of group of individuals.
100% agree. There are, you know, exceptions where some people have some wiring wrong and they might need some medication, but for the most part, community may not heal everything, but it can damn sure help you along the way, right? And I've benefited from jiu-jitsu. Now I'm 43 years old, and every freaking time I get back in there, I rip something in my knee or my shoulder. So it's been a long journey for me, but who has benefited more than anybody are my kids. My kids have been doing it. Now they play other sports, so they're kind of in and out of there, but it has given them confidence. Mm-hmm. It's given them, that's the big one. They can walk around confident. They're never going to be a bully. Yep. Right? Because they've gotten their butts kicked too many times in jiu-jitsu. They're never going to let somebody else get bullied because they know that they can step in if they need to. They know how to deal with tough situations. And they're 13 and 8, but they're learning how to get uncomfortable, get their neck choked a little bit, their arm bent a little bit, and they know that they can just reset and try to get better. So the parallels to life, man, are so good. And it doesn't have to be jiu-jitsu, to your point. It could be anything that requires consistency and discipline to improve in, which is most things in life, that also gives you the community aspect of it. So
100%.
Yep. So Philip, man, your journey is fascinating. I think, I've made a page full of notes. You've given me more questions than I have about all that you have going on that, I'd love to dive into, and maybe we can do another episode later this year. But, what we'll do is drop, links to all of the way folks can contact you and your email and all that. We'll drop that in the show notes. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap things up?
Not really, man. Just, thank you very much for having me on your show. Really do appreciate that. Really good conversations, and, you know where your folks can find me. It's in the show notes, guys.
Yep. Well, I appreciate it, man. Appreciate you coming on Burning the Ships, and we'll talk to you soon, Philip.
All right, man.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.